It's a mock draft Monday here on a Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Bo Brock. Give me a follow on Twitter, at Bob Rack. Lot to get into on this episode of the podcast, but excited to bring in Johnny Touchdown, our guy Johnny from over at the Revenge of the Birds podcast. He's been kind enough. Well, let's be honest, Johnny. We all have extra time on our hands these days, but I appreciate you taking some time to join me today on the Locked On Cardinals podcast.
Hey, thanks, Bo, for having me. Excited to be on. Excited to visit with you and your listeners and talk some Cardinal football in a world that's otherwise not super normal right now. Give some folks some distraction.
Absolutely. A little levity. And you and Blake do that over on Revenge of the Birds, your podcast. You can follow them on Twitter at ROTBpod. Contribute over at SB Nation's Revenge of the Birds. Subscribe today. This is fun. We do crossovers between different podcast hosts of different teams, Johnny, on our network. But to be able to do it kind of across platforms, across networks, and just talk some Cardinals, this is exciting for me. And we're going to get into the discussion. Colin Cowherd, a guy who's kind of known for being filled with hot air, had an interesting debate going on with Magic Johnson about who the best athlete in the world is. And could that person be wearing an Arizona Cardinals uniform? We'll get into that, as well as Johnny's takes on the Arizona Cardinals offseason. I know he's talked a lot about it on his own podcast. I want to give our Locked On listeners his thoughts on that, and we'll preview that all-important 8th overall selection. Will the Arizona Cardinals stick and pick? Are they looking at the offensive line, a very talented group, or are they looking elsewhere? What positions could they be looking at? We'll get Johnny's thoughts, my own as well. Bo Brock, Johnny Touchdown here on Locked On Cardinals. But first, the Arizona Cardinals, they've got a couple members on the all-decade team, and they've made some progress for the organization from one decade to the next. We'll break those down, plus who could be next for the Roaring 20s all-decade team. We'll get into that. That's your Locked On Cardinals lead story. I'm your host, Bo Brock, along with my buddy, Johnny Touchdown. So the all-decade team was released by the NFL. Larry Fitzgerald, Calais Campbell, now a member of the Baltimore Ravens after spending a couple seasons in Jacksonville. Chandler Jones and Patrick Peterson, all members of the all-decade team. I got to say, Johnny, this is some progress for an organization that only featured, I guess you could say, Edgerrin James during the aughts decade.
Yeah, well, it not so coincidentally coincides well with their most sustained success in franchise history. They made it to an NFC championship game. They won multiple division titles. So, you know, it just goes to show you that when you have success, things like this come after the fact. And hopefully we see them build upon this, you know, into the 20s and moving forward. But yeah, absolutely. And majority of these guys were homegrown talent outside of Chandler Jones. I think that's a good sign for this franchise. When we talk about Tyrann Mathieu and Patrick Peterson, putting together those two individuals and essentially 2 years apart, Patrick Peterson was drafted, I believe, in 2011, and then Tyrann Mathieu came in 2013. Of course, Chandler Jones coming over from New England. And then Calais Campbell, probably one of their best second-round picks of all time. He came in the 2008 draft, and then, of course, the next year they went to the Super Bowl. So, yeah, unfortunately, not all these guys could stay with the Cardinals for the length of their career. That's just the way business goes, and I'm sure if you ask Steve Keim, he would have preferred to keep them around, knowing what he knows now. But again, being able to see this franchise being so well represented on this list, I think tells you about where they've gone and then where they can continue to go, specifically, Bo, on the offensive side.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald, we all know about Fitz. And funny enough, he didn't even make the first part of this, the 2000s decade team, because it was such a stacked position at the wide receiver spot. A bunch of guys wearing gold jackets occupied those spots. But Fitz, he entered the decade at 27 years old. And then the stats that he's compiled, and he was the second wide receiver on this list, continue to be head-scratching, and he continues to just defy odds playing at the high level that he has at his age. Fitz, drafted by Denny Green. Calais Campbell, you mentioned, drafted by Rod Graves. Patrick Peterson, drafted by Rod Graves. Chandler Jones, acquired by Steve Keim, as you mentioned, with the trade. He got the once-over on Bill Belichick. That doesn't happen very often. And then you mentioned Tyrann Mathieu, drafted by Steve Keim. So Steve Keim has his hands all over, at least half of these these players on this all-decade team, which is, that's a good sign for the Cardinals. Say what you will about Keim, but he has been obviously successful, more successful than most general managers in franchise history, continues to kind of buck the trend that was going on there for a couple down years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hope he can string together more of these impact type drafts, because that's what really got them to the point where they were competing for an NFC championship game. Yes, we've talked about at length, you know, the amount of first round misses and busts that he's had, but it's that sweet spot on day two and three of the draft when he's found the likes of Marcus Golden and David Johnson, Tyrann Mathieu and John Brown. Once he started to string together that in combination with, you know, a slew of quality free agent additions via a trade like Chandler Jones and of course, Carson Palmer for a late round pick, he got the Cardinals competitive very quickly, albeit with the help of Bruce Arians. And hopefully we're starting to see him kind of take that, turning the corner at this point with the Hopkins deal, hopefully being able to string together a couple quality drafts in a row. We like, of course, what he did last year with the selection of Kyler Murray, but he's got to hit on those first round picks, both something that he unfortunately hasn't been able to do all that well. But I think it is a positive sign that we've seen him be able to have so much success on day two and in free agency when dealing these draft picks for proven star players.
And that's some interesting points you make there, because I think the Arizona Cardinals, one of their bigger problems was, and it's not a knock on the organization, but there just weren't the players in place, and that comes with good drafting, that other players, especially on the open market, are going to want to come and play with. And I think when we have an eye on the future and we look at the roaring 20s that might be with the Arizona Cardinals and all this momentum that they've gained in the last year and a half with making the decision to get off of Josh Rosen and go with Kyler Murray, that Kyler Murray is probably, you'll start there with potential players on the next all-decade team.
Yeah, he has to be the front and center candidate for that, because unfortunately they just don't have enough good young players to fill that void. When I look at this roster right now, it's far too top-heavy with older players, veteran players that are still elite. When you talk about Chandler Jones, Patrick Peterson, probably wouldn't include DeAndre Hopkins in an older player category, but anytime you start to reach the age of 30, you know, question marks will come out about durability and productivity. Kyler Murray is by far and away their best player in his mid to low 20s. I mean, he's, what, 21, 22 years old at this point? They don't have anybody even comparable. Maybe you would consider a Buda Baker, who just made his first Pro Bowl in year three, but would anybody consider Buda Baker a top three safety in the NFL? That's the kind of caliber player you have to be over a sustained period of time to be able to make a list like this. And generally, those positions come early in the draft. And we could look at this pick eighth overall if Keim were to hit on a Derrick Brown, a Tristan Wirfs, maybe he goes receiver and goes CeeDee Lamb. One of those players, if you want to achieve this level of success, you got to generally get them early in the draft. And so, you know, 10 years from now, maybe we're talking about one of those individuals. But again, this roster for me is just a little too top heavy. We don't have those 25 and under great talents on the roster outside of course, Murray and maybe, you know, a Buda Baker.
Yeah, Buda Baker, maybe Byron Murphy if he makes a big jump in his second season, the second round pick out of Washington, but that's a big if. And then the guys you mentioned, yeah, I mean, even Hopkins, he'll be 28 to start the season. Fitz, as I mentioned, 27 when this decade began, but, you know, he defied the odds. Not a lot of receivers have their best years after 30 years old, but DeAndre Hopkins, he's in his prime. He's going to have some big years.
Absolutely.
Is it going to put him in the all-decade? Maybe not, but you're still going to get a lot of value there, and we still got to pat Steve Keim on the back for the acquisition. It's Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bo Brock, Johnny Touchdown. Give him a follow on Twitter, @JohnnyTouchdown. Great follow there, great insight. We continue our discussion. Get more into the Arizona Cardinals offense. Steve Keim, he's on a heater. What he's done and what he continues and what he needs to accomplish the rest of the way out. That's coming up next here on Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network. It was a rough Sunday for the Phoenix Suns. Yeah, the NBA season is, it's obviously on hold, as is everything in the world right now. But Devin Booker, when given the opportunity to select his team in the NBA 2K tournament, kind of gave the old Heisman to the Phoenix Suns, and that one kind of hurt for Phoenix sports fans. But, you know, look, whether it had to do with Devin Booker's rating or lack of talent on the roster, or he just wanted to play with the Greek freak on NBA 2K while he's just playing video games, maybe we won't buy too much into that conversation, but it did still kind of hurt. It's Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network. Tune in to Locked On Suns, obviously, for the full breakdown. I know you want to hear full insight on that. But Johnny Touchdown continues to join us here on today's special crossover edition. Of course, co-host of Revenge of the Birds podcast, ROTB Pod on Twitter with Blake Murphy. Blake's going to join Alex for a podcast later this week. Looking forward to that. And then, of course, you can hear us on their podcast. Just a little cool crossover series we're doing here as we're kind of just burning time between now and the beginning of the NFL draft. But, Johnny, I want to get your thoughts on the Arizona Cardinals offseason, some main takeaways, because Steve Keim, according to a lot of the experts, the pundits out there, they like what he's done. And absolutely, he's earned that. The trade for DeAndre Hopkins was an incredible blockbuster that has kind of reversed the fortunes of this organization that's been down for the last two seasons. I'll kind of give way to you and you take it from here and just kind of break down what your thoughts are on the three main acquisitions on the defensive side of the football, Hopkins, and maybe what you think the Cardinals need to do going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we heard about it progressing throughout the duration of the beginning of the offseason that Keim had to remain aggressive with Kyler Murray under that valuable rookie contract. For those of you who aren't familiar, rookie quarterbacks make next to nothing in comparison to their counterparts in the league for the first 5 years of their career. They get that fifth-year option as a first-round pick, so you want to take advantage of that window. And Keim looks to be doing that, especially on the offensive side. The trade for DeAndre Hopkins will probably go down already as a top-three trade, assuming he stays healthy in franchise history. I think it has a chance to challenge the Chandler Jones trade, given the fact that I think that the combination of Murray and Hopkins could go down as one of the best in the history of the franchise. And then again, you have to talk about compensation. To be able to unload David Johnson and his $10 million guaranteed contract for the 2020 season, along with a mere second-round pick number 40 for Hopkins. Oh, and by the way, you've got a fourth round this year. It's phenomenal value. You guys have heard, I'm sure by now, all the pundits and media grade this heavily in the Cardinals' favor. And so, you know, putting that aside, because it is such a blockbuster and Keim could probably pack it in from there. He made a couple shrewd defensive signings. I don't love them. Jordan Phillips on a three-year deal. Listen, they needed to find a quality starter up front on the defensive line. I made the argument previously on our show, Bo, that they probably needed to sign two starters on the defensive line. They didn't do that, which you could read the tea leaves and say maybe that means Derek Brown is coming with the eighth overall pick. But Jordan Phillips is a nice start, 9.5 sacks for Buffalo last year. He had been under Vance Joseph with his time in Miami. So we'll see what he can do. If he's a good, solid starter, we talked about that gap in talent on the previous segment. That's what they need to fill out the meat of this roster. And he's going to be around for 3 years. So hopefully he can kind of carry that torch from Corey Peters. The other two individuals, listen, I was not a huge Devin Kennard fan. I know people get hung up on the hometown kid coming back and playing with the Cardinals. Didn't we just see that with Terrell Suggs last offseason? Didn't work out all that well. I think that factor is a little bit overblown, but much younger, much more of a team, locker room guy, should be able to contribute in some facet. I would have liked to see them pivot to somebody like Marcus Golden, bring him back opposite Chandler Jones. I know they had some interest to what degree, but when the Lions cut Kennard, they pivoted and went heavy on him in the tune of a three-year contract. And then lastly, DeAndre Campbell, I thought, was a very shrewd signing, being able to bring him in on an incentive-laden deal for a one-year contract. And listen, if he has a really nice year, you can pivot that and add more years, assuming you don't add an Isaiah Simmons in the draft. So again, that contract was the kind of contract they needed to be able to add. But we talked about at the beginning of the offseason, the Cardinals having the most cap space that they've had in some time. Well, majority of that is gone now. And you talk about being able to add money and years to Hopkins' deal. Maybe you want to re-sign some of your own guys like a Buda Baker, or Christian Kirk this time next year. I just think that where Keim is at his best, most fans know this, is after the first two or three waves of free agency, as we get into the latter half of the spring, early on in the summer. Can he find an Eric Winston? Can he find a Jonathan Abraham, a Dwight Freeney that can come in immediately and make an impact? And, you know, there aren't too many guys left out there of notoriety. Marcus Golden, for whatever reason, remains unsigned. I'm sure he's waiting for the Jadeveon Clowney shoe to drop in terms of that pass rusher market. But I would imagine Keim has done his due diligence now. He's aiming for the draft. Whatever he doesn't get filled via the draft, and he's done a nice job. He's done a nice job bringing in Band-Aids and you know, veterans to supplement certain areas on the roster so he doesn't have to reach in the draft, especially now when you don't have pick 40. But you look at this summer, he's going to probably be nimble with his one-year contracts that he normally does, the take-it-or-leave-it deals. But I would still like to see him add a veteran corner to compete with a Robert Alford, who's essentially an unknown right now, missed all of last year with that injury. Maybe somebody like an Eli Apple, who I know they've had interest in prior off seasons. I think he was supposed to go to the Las Vegas Raiders, and he had his contract voided, so maybe he's not healthy. But there are going to be a couple signings over the course of the summer. Listen, he found, I think Max Williams was a preseason signing early on in that process. He traded for Kenyon Drake midseason. So you can make an argument that when Keim is not overzealous at the start of free agency outside of trades, because he's done a phenomenal job in the veteran trade market, he's at his best finding low risk, high value deals over the course of the spring and the summer. So I think we should all temper our expectations until after the draft, and then maybe he could find a couple savvy veterans that could push this team right now, Bo, with 7 playoff spots up for grabs, into the postseason come 2020.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with most of the things that you're saying there, and Steve Keim seems to perform the best when the lights are a little bit lower and the pressure's off. I mean, we you talked about it. You mentioned the first-round pick and the lack of success there. I mean, he hasn't done it so far as Cardinals general manager in back-to-back years, hitting on a first-round pick. And that's where you're going to see the lack of depth in his inability, I guess I would say, to stay away from maybe those FCS wide receivers come around two or three or four.
Yes.
The guys that sometimes don't even make these rosters, it's tough when you're trying to develop depth. But he's also, on the other side of things, you mentioned it, he has hit on those bargain bin, kick the tires on these veteran players, and they come in and they make an impact, and they are out there, and especially at some positions of need for the Arizona Cardinals. As you mentioned, the defensive secondary, despite what Patrick Peterson said at the end of last season, they can't move forward with the status quo. One of the worst defensive secondaries. I know you were out without P2 for 6 games, and he was kind of knocking the rust off for a couple more of those games, but still, you need somebody more opportunistic in that secondary to create more turnovers. Now, it could be a catch-22 where you're looking for more pass rush up front, and they might have supplemented that in this offseason already with, as you mentioned, Phillips, 9.5 sacks, 7 sacks from Kennard, close to 16.5 sacks combined coming in. But still, you're still looking for more disruption, more opportunistic, more plays to be made on this defense. But, man, it is you have to give Keim passing grades for now. But I still want to – the jury is out, in my opinion, where he has to put together this complete offseason, because I feel there are some similarities between this offseason and last offseason, where there wasn't the splash of a Hopkins deal, but there was the move to get off of Josh Rosen for Kyler Murray, and that was right. There was Jordan Hicks. But beyond that, as you've said and pointed out, it's very top-heavy. There's not much depth to it. There's not much depth behind that. And that's kind of what separates the teams that are contending for spots in January and teams that are already, vying and jockeying for draft position at that time.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And I think the age-old saying is, if you can string together 3 quality off seasons in a row, you can become a contender. What that looks like, multiple Pro Bowlers every offseason, I don't think that's realistic. But again, if you're hitting on your first-round pick, and of course, quarterback's the most important position, he checked that box finally in the young franchise quarterback last offseason. Now, just continue to string together quality offseasons, do it this offseason, do it next offseason, and suddenly he'll be able to remake this roster. I think that's what we all love so much about the NFL. Unlike Major League Baseball, unlike the NBA, so many guaranteed contracts. It's tough to move off of veteran players or injury-riddled players. The NFL, you can move off of guys fairly quickly. I mean, David Johnson just got his extension not too long ago. He's out of town now. Okay, so the Cardinals are going to be able to continue reshaping this roster. Overthecap.com does a phenomenal job. If you want to educate yourself on where the Cardinals stand salary cap-wise, what they're playing current players, and just look at the bottom of the roster, it's not up to snuff with a lot of the Cardinal counterparts, with their counterparts within the division for sure, with the likes of Seattle and certainly San Francisco. as they continue to fill out that mid-tier to bottom tier of the roster. I mean, listen, they had Calais Campbell as a backup on the Super Bowl team. You go back to the NFC title game. How many of those players are now shining with other teams? Tyrann Mathieu, of course, got injured that season, but was one of their key players. Calais Campbell now gone. You know, Darnell Dockett's not walking through that door. Carlos Dansby, all of these great defensive players that were staples for this franchise for so long have since moved on. And so it's exciting to talk about the next era, the next wave of Cardinal football led by Kyler Murray. But they need to do a better job supplementing some of these other positions on the roster. I still think, you know, offensively, Bo, they're going to be an explosive firework of a top 10 offense easily with the additions they've made. Defensively, can they just get to a point where they're not egregious, where they're not 31st, 32nd? Can they move into, you know, the mid-20s, maybe even the top 20s, 21, 22, 23 overall ranked when they're not dominant, but they're opportunistic? I go back to the Kansas City Chiefs of 2 years ago. When they had that record-setting season, when they went to the AFC title game, they lost to New England. That was not a good defense, but it was good enough to get them competitive. And then what they do this prior offseason, they went out, they added Frank Clark, they added all Tyrann Mathieu, they added all these signature defensive starters in free agency because of Mahomes and his rookie contract, and they won the Super Bowl. I think the Cardinals can follow a similar plan, and that's why I think people need to pump the brakes on the expectations that everything's got to get done this offseason. No, I think Kime's doing a good job making calculated decisions that will not sacrifice this team cap-wise or pick-wise, you know, outside of 2020. We want to look long-term with Kyler Murray.
I got a big question for you, Johnny, of course. Co-host Revenge of the Birds podcast, SB Nation's Revenge of the Birds, that I want you to answer on the other side. That being said, and some very good points, as the Arizona Cardinals sit at 8th overall, the decision to go offensive lineman or impact defender, you know, what's that mean for the team's future? Which direction should the team go? We'll break it down. We'll debate it. That's all coming up next. It's Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network. It's a Mock Draft Monday here on Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And our friends over at thedraftnetwork.com, they're doing a cool little event. It's the Mock Draft Madness, where they're taking just their stable of mock drafters, and they're all presenting their one-round mock drafts and then pitting each other against each other, because our lack of brackets this year is a big void in our hearts. So this is one of the things to try to fill that void. And I just kind of went through it. And I broke it down as I'm sitting here with Johnny from, of course, Revenge of the Birds, the podcast. And I was looking at this mock draft, and the name that's there for the Cardinals most at 8, Johnny, is Tristan Wirfs, who, depending on which draft expert analyst you're following, I guess he's probably your consensus top offensive tackle in this draft. But here's how it breaks down as far as our friends over at the Draft Network. Wirfs, he's there, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 times. And then you've got the Cardinals selecting Jedrick Wills and then Mekhi Becton, the second most over Wills. Wills is the third most. And one draft expert has in his mock draft the Cardinals trading down with their former coach Bruce Arians and Jason Light, of course, the GM there for Tampa, and trading for 2 third-round picks, one this season and one in the next 2021 draft. With the Bucks, Cardinals get the 14th pick, Bucks get the 8th, and it still has the Cardinals selecting Mekhi Becton and getting an extra third this year and next year, which to me is really intriguing. But I want to get your thoughts, Johnny, on which direction you think the Arizona Cardinals go if they stick and pick. And let's get into this trade scenario where Steve Keim is given extra draft assets. And, you know, he's hit on that sometimes. I mean, there's the trade where he traded down Deion Buchanan, where they traded with the Saints. Saints took Brendan Cooks, and then Cardinals take Deion Buchanan 27th overall and then select Smokey Brown in the 3rd round. With that kind of potential, that's a little intriguing. But just your thoughts, they stick and pick at 8. Who are you looking at them? What are a couple prospects you're interested in?
Yeah, it's what I'm interested in, what the team's interested in are probably two different things. You know, the more I hear coming from, you know, sources online, and, you know, it's the Derrick Brown hype train right now at pick 8 for the Cardinals because they didn't add a ton on the defensive line. It fits what they do historically. It's a very safe pick. I don't love that pick at 8. Here's how I garner it in my head, Bo, is you think about, okay, let's just assume that three quarterbacks are going to go in the top seven, right? Tua, Burrow, and Justin Herbert. That means that the Cardinals are going to have their pick of position players of the top five players on their board. There should be a top five player on their board come pick eight mathematically if the three quarterbacks go ahead of them. There should not be a scenario, in my opinion, outside of a team just giving you a boatload of picks to move down into the teens where you should move down from pick eight. You should be convinced at pick eight that you're getting the top five player in the draft. In my opinion, I would go with Tristan Wirfs. I think he's the safest offensive tackle. I think he's got positional flexibility where he could play right tackle or right guard. Listen, Iowa is an offensive line factory. He was the only true freshman to start for Kirk Ferentz at the University of Iowa. If you don't know much about that program, what Kirk Ferentz has done, not only in the collegiate ranks, but he was Bill Belichick's offensive line coach during his time in Cleveland. That's what he does. Count just the slew of quality offensive linemen that program churns out. Wirfs would come in, and I think at worst would be a good right tackle, and I think he's got potential to be a top five right tackle in the first 2 to 3 years he comes into the NFL. I think he's got that kind of impact. Now, some would argue, Bo, Jedrick Wills, right tackle from Alabama, is a better prospect, and in certain instances, he does have better tape. He's a better pass protector. What I would argue and what I caution folks on is how many elite offensive prospects come from that program, the University of Alabama, and pan out the next level. It's a very slim list. There are no tackles. All the tackles have either underachieved or flat out busted. The only one that's made a Pro Bowl since Saban has been there on the offensive line has been Ryan Kelly, the center that the Indianapolis Colts took a couple years ago. He's had some injuries on top of it, and that's what happens when people leave that program. Their bodies start to break down. So my only hope with Jedrick Wills is Bama has gotten away from that stereotypical I formation, let's run the ball 50 times a game. They're playing much more consistent formations that you now see in the NFL, very similar. Tua and Kyler Murray, similar kind of quarterbacks running the same kind of offense. And so you would hope that, okay, he's more comfortable in the spread, moving around. And listen, he has elite tape. So should the Cardinals go with Wills or Wirfs at pick eight, I would be ecstatic. I think they should go offensive line. I think you protect your investment. This is a historically great offensive tackle class. And to be able to have maybe your pick of all four, Andrew Thomas and Becton thrown into that group, your pick of the four at eight, which is where it's kind of leaning to right now, I think is too good to be true. I like Justin Murray. I was happy to see what Sean Coogler was able to do with him last year. He got his incentive bonus. Great. Make him your swing tackle. I'm not on the Marcus Gilbert hype train. He hasn't played consistent football in 3 years. He's an older player. Listen, let's say they don't go right tackle at eight, and let's fast forward to week one. Humphreys has an injury history, even though he played all 16 games last year. Justin Murray is an average, if not below average, right tackle, and Marcus Gilbert can't stay healthy. You have not done anything to upgrade that unit from a year ago. I think you're playing with a little bit of fire in that scenario. You need to insert young, talented linemen into this pipeline. And if they become good players, that's more than what this unit has had for the better part of the last two decades. So I would go right tackle. I think the other option, like you mentioned, maybe you trade down. I would not go past pick 13 in the San Francisco 49ers. That meaning I wouldn't go past pick 12. The LA Raiders, keep wanting to call them the Oakland Raiders. The LA Raiders have pick 12. The Cardinals have picked with the Oakland Raiders, have traded with them, I should say, in years prior with the Josh Rosen deal. I would not feel comfortable going beyond that spot. But then you also look at the Raiders need a receiver. The Jets, who pick right before them, need a receiver and a tackle. The Browns need a tackle at 10. So even if you move down two or three spots, your board could be picked over. That's why at the end of the day, I know Kime has done his best work in the third round. I applaud him for that. And he's got a third this year, and he's got two fours that he could easily turn into another third rounder. But I would be careful about selling my soul for an extra third or even two thirds if it means that I'm not getting a top player on my board. I do not want to walk down to pick 13, 14, 15 and have to pick one of these secondary offensive tackles or a Javon Kinlaw, a secondary defensive tackle, CJ Henderson. That doesn't mean these guys are going to be good players, but you're picking in the top 10 for a reason, and you've got multiple positions in need that could be addressed with a blue chip prospect at pick eight. I would just feel much more comfortable staying home, standing pat, getting that player, and then if you're worried about not having enough day two picks on day two, throw on some DeAndre Hopkins highlights. I'm sure you'll feel a lot better.
And I mean, we've seen Steve Keim try to address needs by flooding that position with numbers. I mean, we saw it at the wide receiver spot in the last 2 years, four wide receivers in the last two drafts, and it hasn't worked out for the team. We see what getting a blue chip type talent, and we'll call DeAndre Hopkins, who's a proven commodity, where here we're kind of a little bit unknown at eight, but still to bring in a blue chip type player and the potential impact he can make and how it just changes the perception of the Arizona Cardinals or whichever team is selecting that player, how it changes the perception that if you can get a guy, whether it's Wirfs, whether it's Wills, whether it's Becton, whoever stands out on tape and whoever you're convicted in selecting, it completely changes the way you view that offense and how you game plan that offense. And you're exactly right as far as the Gilbert and the Murray. And look, Murray was a pleasant surprise, but still, this is going to be the status quo for the most part. Maybe even, you know, take away A.Q. Shipley, who started 16 games at the center position, for this offensive line that surrendered a league-leading sack total to your rookie quarterback. It's the best opportunity to upgrade at a position that is no longer, I mean, it's the days of getting Jared Valdir and Mike Iupati on the free agent market are gone. Teams are wiser now to where they're holding on to those types of players. They're getting extensions. I mean, Jack Conklin, who is your, you know, consensus top free agent tackle on the market, he's got his, you know, not exactly a franchise tackle. So, you know, this is the best opportunity for them to upgrade. We talk about Kyler Murray and the ability to build around him with that rookie scale contract. You get the same thing, that value at the tackle position, where you have a rookie scale contract for 4 years, you're paying guys the total amount, which they're getting per season now. I mean, you're getting tackles who are making upwards of $15 million a year, where the total contract for a rookie deal is $15 million. So I just think that this is the best opportunity for the Cardinals to really upgrade at a position, especially given what they've invested in the defense, which is not a finished product. You mentioned exactly, you know, the Jordan Phillips, the Devon Carnards, and the Campbells out there that they signed to deals this year. They have their own kind of question marks around them, but are they upgrades at each position? Absolutely. Are they going to take this team from a bottom-of-the-barrel defense and put them right up there where it needs to be? You know, whether it's the Kansas City Chiefs of a couple years ago, Jordan Hicks seems to think that they have similarities between the Eagles from a couple years ago. The defense is way off of that path. You got to think that the guys that they brought in can make an impact enough, and Patrick Peterson potentially playing a full season, that they're going to be improved, but are they going to be enough to where they can really truly contend? That's another question. But, I completely agree with your assessment of the draft. And, you know, Wirfs, Wills, that's where I think me more in the opinion business and not in the scouting business, that's where I fall short. And it's tough for me to decipher the difference between those prospects. And, you know, Wills, I like that he's got the right tackle experience because Tua is the lefty and you got to protect his blind side. But Wills, no doubt about it, was the best offensive lineman on that Bama team. But the point you make about Bama not really producing, you know, Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen outside of, you know, the center and Ryan Kelly, you're right. I mean, Chance Womack was the same draft as Jonathan Cooper and was just as big of a bust. It's a tough position to evaluate. And that's an interesting draft to look at here, Johnny, is that, you know, that was a draft that produced Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, the top two picks, and Lane Johnson, who's probably arguably the best offensive lineman out of that, you know, highly regarded, highly heralded offensive line class, that also produced Cooper and Womack and then Kyle Long later in that draft. It's just a tough position to really evaluate.
Yeah, and you're going to roll the dice at some point. I think there is trepidation and concern from the fan base that, well, we can't go tackle because we always miss on offensive linemen. If that's the mindset that you're taking, then we shouldn't have taken a quarterback last year.
Right.
Because historically, the team has never hit on a franchise quarterback. We, knock on wood, like to think that we've done that now. And so I take comfort in knowing that I think Cliff Kingsbury's offensive line schematics are very team-friendly, offensive line-friendly. I think that's why DJ Humphreys had the year that he had. I think Sean Coogler is the best offensive line coach that they've had maybe since they've moved to Arizona. And I think that right now, being able to be in a position where you're going to get a player in Tristan Wirfs or Jedrick Wills that played right tackle at a high level in the Big Ten and the SEC, And just to come in and ask them to do the exact same thing in the NFL. We're not taking them at right tackle and making them a left tackle, which we've seen a lot of times these teams do. The Cardinals have a left tackle right now. You know, regardless of how you feel about DJ Humphries, he's under contract for 3 years. If he gives you what he gave you last year, it's going to be a really nice deal for both parties. You're going to ask Wills or Wirfs to come in and just say, be a good, competent right tackle that hopefully can elevate yourself at some point into a blue chip player. That's more than the Cardinals have had. When's the last time they've drafted a young offensive tackle or guard or center or whatever that's coming from the start and just man the position, you know, with a lunch pail mentality for 5 to 10 years? It doesn't happen. And so I get caught, we're caught up in the flash of another wide receiver to pair with Kyler Murray, which right now, in my opinion, after the Hopkins deal, you can't sink that many resources in receiver, even though the guys last year just haven't panned out yet. Let's give Isabella another offseason. Let's see what Hakeem Butler can do when he's healthy. And goodness, they're adding Hopkins to Fitzgerald and Kirk. I think Christian Kirk, I might be in the minority, can still be a low-end number one or high-end number two receiver in this league, assuming he can stay healthy. They need to address other positions outside a wide receiver. And so the value is there for them to do that. If you want to turn your attention to an Isaiah Simmons, I know that, you know, he's a hot button player right now. When you talk about, could he go forward to the Giants? Could the Panthers take him at 7? Would it bother me if the Cardinals took him? No, because I think he is a blue chip player. I think he's a top 5 player, and he would fill a position of need. I'm just not convinced, and maybe this is speaking more to my lack of faith in Vance Joseph right now, that they would get the most out of him. We've seen, and there's caution in the fan base amongst us as well, we've seen them take a defensive end from Temple and try to make him an inside linebacker. Yeah. We've seen them take a safety from Washington State and make him an inside linebacker, dollar linebacker, whatever you want to call Dalen Buchanan. Of course, Isaiah Simmons is a better prospect than both of those individuals, and the right defensive coordinator will be able to make the most out of him. Is that Vance Joseph? I have my concerns, but I would go, if you're not going to go tackle and Simmons is there, I think that's a great value pick. You talk about value, my original point. Is it a top 5 player on your board? Simmons would have to be, in my opinion, as well as one or two of the tackles. The point I want to keep making to the fan base is, I do not think Derrick Brown is one of the top 5 players in this draft. I don't think his combine supports it. He does not do enough to rush the passer. I think he only had like 12 sacks in his career at Auburn. And so those are my concerns. But, you know, I'm not Steve Keim. I'm not Cliff Kingsbury. They may have him rated as a top 5 pick. And if so, I'm going to have to talk myself into him. But I think the tackle market is where you keen in on. And then if you want, you know, a player defensively, I think the only option is Isaiah Simmons. That's assuming if Jeff Okuda doesn't fall to you.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okuda is one of those guys that you, whoever's representing you at the draft or whoever's, I don't know how they're coordinating it because it's all going to be remotely done. You send that instant message, you send that, whatever it may be, you go out there and you get the Okuda who could potentially lock down the opposite of Patrick Peterson for the remainder of his career. And then you have that building block, that potential. When we talk about an all-decade team, guys like Okuda, guys like Simmons, I think that they're more like, okay, the tape tells me, the intangibles tell me that they could be that type of player. Derrick Brown, I mean, he could be 50% an impact player, 50% the next Robert Condici. And, you know, that would just be where the Cardinals have gained all this momentum. A Derrick Brown could be a guy to pull the shoot on this thing immediately if they swing and miss at 8th overall. But, you know, it's such an interesting conversation. You know, as much as I think that the team could find that impact defender that they could start building their defensive round, 8th, when it's just a little slimmer pickings than it is on the offensive line side of the of the conversation. And I think that the Cardinals could really start to cook with gas and have a strength that opposing teams are going to have to game plan for week in and week out when they have to the prospect of facing this offense with Kyler Murray, you know, the next in line of signal callers poised to have a breakout second season. The Cardinals are giving him all the, you know, ingredients for that recipe.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned value. I just think Derrick Brown, if you're picking 8th overall, the player you pick 8th overall, again, when there's 3 quarterbacks presumably going in the top 7, That player needs to check every single box. And Derrick Brown, for whatever reason, did not perform well at the combine. What did Isaiah Simmons do? He was a great kid. He's got elite tape. He's the best player on the field for Clemson defensively. And he went and had a historic combine. Same with CeeDee Lamb. Tristan Wirfs ran a 4.8 40. That's insane. Jedrick Wills had a really good combine. He's got elite tape. Derrick Brown does not check every box. And when you're picking eighth overall and you have all these other options, I think taking him there would be an egregious mistake. And like you mentioned, why not continue to strengthen the offense? Strengthen the area in which Cliff Kingsbury elevates players. You talk about adding a Kenyon Drake, who I think is going to have a monster year. You're adding an all-pro top five receiver, top three receiver in DeAndre Hopkins. What's the last unit that hasn't been addressed? The offensive line. Marcus Gilbert does not count as a competent addition in the offseason. They have not drafted well at the position previously. That's not an excuse you can make. Mason Cole might be an upgrade over A.Q. Shipley. We don't know, but you're counting on Justin Pugh, who's got injury concerns, DJ Humphrey, who's got injury concerns. They need to start to funnel in young, talented players up front. Eventually, they're going to hit on somebody, and I think it's a great year to swing the bat here at eight with one of these tackles.
Yeah, I could talk about this all day, but I don't want to drone on. For our podcast listeners out there, and we appreciate them tuning in, the conversation about who the Cardinals should take eighth overall, I mean, you could spend just hours on it. Just fascinating stuff, of course. Johnny, of course, Revenge of the Birds co-host over there on that podcast with Blake Murphy. Blake's going to join Alex in the next couple days and vice versa. We're going to join them over at Revenge of the Birds. Look for those podcasts as well. But, man, Steve Keim's got a lot more work to do here. He's got some picks. We talk about the secondary, and I think that's a position I'd like to see Steve Keim. I mean, if the Cardinals get off to a good start, whenever the 2020 season starts, begins, I mean, they could follow the blueprint of maybe what the Ravens did and acquire a cornerback. It seems like one's available every season that they could get, with a Marcus Peters acquisition. I don't know. I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Oh, great point. That's a great point.
But it's doable, right? And I think what your point towards Vance Joseph is, what's his second year going to show us? And if this is a defense where the players are buying in, the players are developing from one year to the next, and Joseph proves to be the guy or proves not to be the guy, as long as the offense is what we think it's going to be in 2020, you can address the defense in the next offseason.
Well, and one quick point I do want to make, Bo, for people who are disappointed that Vance is coming back, and I was probably indifferent. If you're going to fire somebody, you better have somebody else ready to go who's an upgrade. You don't want to become the Cleveland Browns where you're turning over your coaching staff every offseason. But given the climate of our culture right now, having stability on the defensive side schematically with the same coordinator will help them. Imagine if they had hired a new defensive coordinator. You're trying to implement everything without OTAs, maybe without a preseason. This is going to set them up for at least more success than they otherwise would have. And so I'm feeling more comfortable about him in year two, especially now you're adding some veteran players that have seen a lot in this league. Of course, Phillips has a resume with Vance Joseph. So again, I think that this is a good offseason to not have made a change with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah, I think the continuity is key, especially as you mentioned with all that turnover, not even just on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, you went from Betcher to Holcomb, from 3-4 to 4-3 to back to 34. That continuity, I think, is key just to kind of maintaining, keeping, whether it's the young players, heads in the game, or whether it's the veteran, it does make a difference. And I think that the continuity is key, and it's the one area where you can risk bringing back VJ for a second season and just seeing what happens. And if not, you cut bait at the end of the next year, or maybe even sooner than that, depending on what the offense, if the offense forced the issue otherwise, that's a good problem to have. This has been a blast. Johnny, of course, follow his work on Twitter at Johnny Football. Listen to his podcast, of course, with Blake Murphy, the co-host of Revenge of the Birds podcast, contributor to SB Nation's Revenge of the Birds. Johnny, it's been a pleasure, man.
Thank you, Bo. Thank you to the listeners. I appreciate you guys having me on. Look forward to chatting again in the near future.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on Locked On Cardinals, part of your Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Now do us a favor, tell your smart device to tune into Locked On NFL.